Reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Pancha Lila, text 134. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chanda Jai Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Excuse me. Etapta Bhu Agyaya Rupa Aila Vrindavana Krishna Lila Nataka Karite Horlaman. Meanwhile, following the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Rupa Goswami returned to Vrindavan. He desired to write dramas concerning the pastimes of Lord Krishna. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Daksurunutam Yena Esmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Amano Vishtam Napitam Yena Bhutale Vayam Rupa Tadamayam Tadati Sapadam Tikam Adaganastanam Dante Itam Yache Puna Puna Srimad Rupa Padam Bhoja Dulisham Janma Janmani Namo Mahabhadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Amne Gora Sise Namaha Pancha Kalpa Karubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Yadvaita Gadadha Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from Newburgh, New York. I'll be heading into New York City in about an hour and a half for most of the week. I do a 6-hour bhakti seminar at Yoga Maya today, which is kind of exciting. And then Tuesday, Bhagavad Gita at Jiva Mukti. And then Thursday at Yoga Maya at 7 o'clock, there'll be another lecture. Nice. And then Saturday, I'll attend the 6-hour Kirtan at the Bhakti Center. And then Sunday, some godbrothers of mine are opening a yoga studio, Stanton Street Yoga in New York City, too. So they'll have Kirtan there. I'll probably go, not sure. So I'm pretty excited to, enter here the Pancha Lila. Where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is really settling down now to fulfill the internal reason to his descent. And real internal meditation, one really has to be sensitive to the environment. And one has to be a little bit careful about too much movement, which is generally in the mode of passion. or if the influence is there. Someone who's self-realized, Bhagavad Gita says he doesn't move. The modes may move around, the influences may be there, but he doesn't react, he doesn't move. Anyway, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is settling in Puri. This is his Anchalila, which is basically the last 18 years of his life, where he's going to, we said before, set the example of how we achieve this Muktirhidva Yata Rupam Sarupena Vivastita. Sarupena Vivastita, how we achieve understanding of our Swarup rather than Yatarup, or rather than something that's external to ourselves, how we actually come in contact with the real you, the real self. As Prabhupada said, and I quoted so many times, the perfectional state of the living entity is called a devotee. How you actually become a devotee. And devotee is not really just an external thing, although the externals may indicate some internal commitment. But bhakti is really an internal thing. It's love. It's love for Krishna. It's not even an intellectual thing, although one may be free from doubts that enable him to pursue an appropriate experience. But it's actually a feeling in the heart of love for Krishna. I was meditating the other day. I really like to be upstate, but I'm being purified and doing my duty that I have to travel. But I have a little corner in my room, and I love to sit in that room, and I love to wake up in the morning, and I love to chant. And sometimes some thoughts come. And the thought that I had was, what would real bhakti be like? I'm doing a bhakti seminar today, so there'll be new people. And I've already told that so far they're completely confused about what is bhakti. There's so many conceptions are there, so many ideas are there. They don't get it. People said, no, now you don't worry, Dharadhar Swami's coming. Let's see. I'm thinking one meditation I want to give, and I can give that meditation to you, is just think about last Monday. Think about when you woke up, and think about what the first thing you did, and what was your consciousness? Bhakti is not just something that's done when you sit on an asana. The part of Krishna, everything is Krishna. And everything we do should be for Krishna. Granted, we are entombed in a body that has particular desires, but there's a way to even fulfill them for Krishna. Because it becomes your duty. It's what you need to do to mold the mind to a higher level of consciousness. But bhakti is that internal feeling where one does everything out of love and devotion. And this is the goal. The goal is a heart, a heart filled with love. What can be a more worthy goal than that? It makes so much sense. According to our present frame of reference of the things that we really value and treasure. We treasure happiness. And we inherently know that happiness cannot be attained without love. Happiness is not in the heart of hate. Happiness is not in the heart of pride. Happiness is in the heart of love, devotion, sacrifice. And when you have that devotion, when you have that love, then of course there's corresponding feelings that are expressions of that love, like gratitude, like humility, like compassion. But it's that sense of sacrifice, that sense of surrender, out of love. The sense of something greater than yourself, which you are part of, which you should serve. And in the bhakti tradition, that sense of devotion and love manifests in a relationship. And relationships are five. They're neutral, there's servitude, there's friendship, there's parental, there's conjugal. And that is bhakti. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is here to achieve that. It's to achieve that. To put those sentiments within his heart. So he's coming to Puri, and he's actually coming from Vrindavan. And we saw how the residents of Bengal heard about in their coming. It's part of love. Part of love is that you want to be with those whom you love, and you want to serve those who you love, and you want to develop an intimate relationship with those whom you love. Of course, the most important thing is service, and service may carry you from that personal association, but it doesn't mean that you, in part of love, you don't hanker that. And if you can get an opportunity for it, you certainly do it. So that you can serve. And so that you can please. And you love, and it's devotion. So he heads to those devotees come. And now we have the narrative, the story of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, what you have to understand, there's a story here, but there's a message here. And the message is going to be about the highest sentiments of love and how to achieve that. In the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's going to be the message. So the first story was very nice. The previous verse, he delivered the dog simply by inducing it to chant. And what was the qualification of the dog? The dog took shelter of a Vaishnava. As simple as that. It wasn't a great understanding. Somehow or other, that dog took shelter of a Vaishnava, and the Vaishnava gave shelter to the dog. And therefore, the dog received the blessings of a Vaishnava. So we discussed this sense of encouragement that's needed in the process of bhakti. The sense of encouragement, because our object of attainment is infinite. And we're so limited. So how do we attain that object of attainment? It's only by the mercy. It's only by the mercy of the unlimited. And that's the mood of bhakti. The mood of bhakti is humility. Because it's a recognition of there's something much greater than ourselves that we want to achieve, which will only come by the mercy of what is greater than ourselves. So that's the hope. That's the hope. And that's called asambandha. And when one becomes very advanced in Krishna consciousness, he develops asabandha. It means his hope cannot be bound. And the reason his hope cannot be bound is because he's beginning to realize the glories of Krishna, which not only indicate his infinite opulences, but which include the heart of Krishna, which is kind and merciful. And that gives one hope that despite my qualification, I can achieve. And this creates a very nice mood of bhakti. Bhakti does not begin in the heart unless one gets some sense of humility, a real deep sense of need within the heart, a value of God and our relationship with God, and a realization, an honest realization. I was thinking this morning, because sometimes thoughts do come, but I was thinking this morning, what if there was a mirror that Krishna can put up to me and let me see beyond my own prejudice who I really am? I think I would faint. And I'm not talking about who I really am in terms of my saru. I'm telling about where I'm actually at in relationship to God. Where I'm actually at in my mind, in my consciousness. There's a great difference between who we think we are filtered through our false conception of ourselves and who we are as we're seen in the eyes of God, seen objectively. Because our faculties of rationalization are so profound. Because we're attached to the false conception of ourselves. And we spend lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes of developing mechanisms that prevent us from seeing what separation, the attitude of separation from God, the attitude of a lack of surrender, what that actually looks like. But anyway, the dog took shelter In the Bhagavad, and Jiva Goswami says, devotion in the form of kirtan is unlimitedly merciful to those who are devoid of a sense of false prestige. And he said, therefore, Kali Yuga is good because you don't have many good qualities. But the quality we have is honesty. And honesty will allow us to take shelter. If we're honest about ourselves, we'll actually see that we're dependent on God. And in that humility, we will actually take shelter of God. And we'll feel in heart how relieved we are when we do that. When we let go of the story we have about being the controllers and the enjoyers and the aspirations and desires we have to be the controllers and the enjoyers, we actually let go of that and fully embrace I'm a servant of God. With cognition of all the needs and desires we have to fulfill, to be peaceful in mind, to even have that conception of the body. Anyway, the Anjalila is beautifully set up with this story, and now we're going to be introduced to Srila Rupa Goswami, because it is through Srila Rupa Goswami that we have any entrance into what's coming up in the Anjalila, which is the Mano Vishnam, the secret of the mind of God, which is to attain this wonderful sentiment of devotion at the height. It's inconceivable. The height, the embodiment of devotion, God's Shakti of devotion. If we accept an absolute reality and we accept that absolute reality has energies, any conception we have of an energy independent of God is very limited. It's like devotion. We have a limited conception. But God has an energy of devotion and love that's unlimited. And the only access to understand that is through his devotees. And especially in our lives, Srila Rupa Goswami, who is particularly empowered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to somehow or other make these things relevant, make these things understandable, so that we'll have faith in them and that we can approach them and actually have some experience of them. And he was empowered. And why was he empowered? Because he was an unalloyed servant. He had abilities, but one's abilities and talents are not enough. Those abilities and talents have to be used as an instrument from God, by one who is fully surrendered. And then those abilities and talents go way beyond a karmic level. They become empowered. It's a very, very beautiful thing to see. So we're going to be introduced to Srila Rupa Goswami, and we are Rupa Anugas, not Sanatan Anugas, not Gopal Anugas, not Raganugas, Ragunugas, Raganugas. We're Rupa Anugas. Because in this sense, understand the internal mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Rupa Goswami was particularly empowered to conceptualize and express this. So I taught this in Vrindavan, and it was such a pleasure, really. We'll be going over some of the poetry, and it's just wonderful. Vrindavane Naptakera Aramba Karila Mangalachara Nandi Shloka Tatai Likalila. In Vrindavan, Rupa Goswami began to write a drama. In particular, he composed the introductory verses to invoke good fortune. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur quotes from the Natika Chandrika, where it is written. And then there's all kinds of Sanskrit. Similarly, in the sixth chapter, the Sahitya Darpana text 282 is said, the introductory portion of the drama, which is written to invoke good fortune, is called the Nandi Shloka. So this is just a little bit of an introduction. And we'll get a little taste of poetics here. And I think this group of people that's mostly been listening for many, many years will really, really appreciate this. And briefly, what Srila Rupa Goswami did is a very, very amazing thing. There's a whole history in India of classic poetics and the concept of rasa. And I've studied this for some of the lectures that I gave. And it's very, very interesting. And I just explain it very, very briefly that the history of drama, whether it's audible, poetry or visible theater. The history of drama, it's related by Bharat Muni to a story where Indra, who's the king of heaven, sees that people are not getting the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And he doesn't know what to do, because basically spiritual life begins with transcending or transforming egotism, self-centered conception, where you look at things as objects. You look at the world according to your desires. You put yourself in the center. It's another nice meditation to actually introspect and see how much you are seeing the world through those eyes of me, 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 me. And how much you're seeing the world through God and others. So when you're just seeing the world through the eyes of your selfish desire, it's called egotism. And it's rampant when there's no sense of religiosity. And real religiosity is duty, that there's some principles that you have to conform to. There's some reality that you have to conform to, that's higher than yourself, and it's inherent within your nature, that you're loving. That's not loving nature. That's opposite of bhakti. So what he Bharat Muni did, or what Lord Indra came to Brahma, Brahma went into meditation, and he said, we need something audible, and we need something visible. And then he said, by this rasa, people will transcend ego. And then basically, this Bharat Muni kind of channels this kind of understanding. And the basic understanding is something like this. People in human experience, there are certain emotions that are absolutely consuming. It's like when you have a tragedy, if someone has some romantic feelings, there's different experiences. They're totally consuming. Whatever you do, when you're in a feeling tragedy, loss of a loved one, or some infatuation, it completely absorbs and consumes your consciousness. So what Bharat Muni did, or whether he channeled Lord Brahma, I'm not sure how it happened, he studied human experience to see in each rasa, each very powerful emotion, what are the characters who experience that emotion? What is the setting that supports that emotion? What are the actions of that emotion? What are the accessory emotions that come from that basic emotion, and how do they interact? And what is the basic core feeling and heart of that emotion? And what he did is he detailed it in such a way that when people can compose a drama, they can completely duplicate that experience and communicate perfectly to an audience who will also have that experience. And then the history is different people analyze why that was very kind of spiritual. You have an experience, but it wouldn't be your experience. So it would bring you out of the sense of the limited I. There would also be a sense of oneness in that experience, because everyone would be experiencing the same thing. So they felt on some level, some people thought that that aesthetic experience, which is communicated called rasa, was a deep spiritual experience in itself. Most of the impersonalists thought that way. Or they at least thought that it was elevating, because you had to have some kind of qualification, first of all, to experience it. You had to be a little cultured to experience it. You had to be a little trained to experience it. You had to be a little sensitive to experience it. And the experience itself would be somewhat transcendent to your limited self. You would lose yourself. And they would say this is some kind of hint of what it's like to be free from the ego, where everything is centered on you. You're experiencing something, but it has nothing to do with you. They had these different theories. I'm sure it's more complicated than I understand. So this was developed within India by a lot of the Kashmiri Shaivites. They would actually profess that this was actually a practice to have some impersonal experience. We also want an experience of unity. Even if you're a bhakta, you want to get away from this divided type experience. You want to have some kind of spiritual, transcendent experience, not so centered on the limited I. They develop very, very fascinating theories about this. And Rupa Goswami comes later on, and as far as I can see, he makes an astounding discovery. Because this poetic theory, this aesthetic theory, it's extremely complex. It's an in-depth analysis of how these emotions are brought to a consuming level in human life, in theater, and in the experience of the audience. I mean, I've studied it to some degree, and it's absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So what happens is, what Rupa Goswami discovers is that predating this, at least according to his analysis, predating it, according to our faith predating it, the Bhagavatam is completely composed according to this aesthetic theory, perfectly. And it predates this. So his understanding is, and the consuming emotion that the Bhagavatam describes is bhakti, or devotion to God, in a very intense way. And that's what a devotee is. He's experiencing rasa. He's overwhelmed with an incredible devotion to God. Completely overwhelmed. In perfection, he's experiencing rasa. He's experiencing rasa. So what he concluded is, because the Bhagavatam gives a description, not just of human experience, but it gives a description of what, according to that tradition, is ultimate reality. It's the exchange of love between the Supreme Lord and his energies, which is what the history of the Bhagavatam is. That's what this, the author of the Bhagavatam saw. He's meditating on reality, and he saw that it was an exchange of love between God and God's energies. So what he came to the conclusion is that rasa is reality. That when you want to achieve perfection, when you want to achieve perfection, you will exist in rasa. And the verse in the Tathagata Upanishad says, rasa vai saha. It is rasa, the absolute reality. And that the Bhagavatam describes that, and those who listen to it will feel that. And that was one of the main ways in which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would try to fulfill his internal mission. He would hear stories based on the Bhagavatam. And they just had to be perfectly composed, otherwise Sri Damodar Goswami wouldn't let them let Chaitanya hear him, because if it's not composed properly, you get vasavas. You only get like a shadow of that feeling. So this was Rupa Goswami's contribution, that he understood that the Bhagavatam was essential to actually have these sentiments and feelings of self-realization as rasa, as a devotee overwhelmed with this experience. And therefore he began to write dramas understanding this rasa theory. He began to write dramas understanding this rasa theory based on the Bhagavatam, so that people can experience Bhakti Raj. So Krishnadas Kaviraj, in his ecstasy, he's not going to get into this later. He said, Rupa Goswami began to write a drama. Lord Chaitanya, interesting, he sent him back to Vrindavan, because Vrindavan has the Udipit. It has the inspiration to feel these things and these sentiments. So a lot of these dramas are written in Vrindavan. I can understand why being there. Now I'm feeling separation. Oh, Vrindavan, my Vrindavan. It's such an incredible, incredible place. So many advanced Vaishnavas. In ISKCON. So many. Really? I know. It's just so very good. So this introductory portion, it invokes good fortune, is called a Nandi Shloka. Pati Chali Nata Kira Gata Navagate On his way to go to Desh, Rupa Goswami has been thinking of how to write the action of the drama. Thus he has made some notes and began to write. He wants to write Gatana, the actions, the events of the drama. So he begins to write. What a nice Krishna Anushilanam. What a nice mood of cultivating Krishna consciousness. Thinking about writing dramas, about just like the artist in the early days, they had to really think about what does Krishna look like to make those paintings and get the inspiration. And then they had to work at it to recreate that inspiration. What a wonderful thing. What a wonderful thing. And he's going back to Bengal, I guess. He's thinking how to write. You'll find out that, you know, these dramas took him 20, 25 years to write. Wasn't in the mode of passion. He had to think so deep and how perfectly these things are composed. I find that with writing. When you look at the page, it looks insurmountable. When you actually apply your intelligence, there's a story of Oscar Wilde. It said that he spent the whole morning changing one word in his essay. And he spent the whole afternoon returning it to what he had. So that's what writing is like. In this way, the two brothers, Rup and Anupam, reached Bengal. When they arrived there, Anupam died. Anupam is Jiva Goswami's father. It's his younger brother. As sure as death, we're all going to die. Prashanapina Pashyati, but we don't act that way. We act like this world is permanent. Now, you have to be satisfied, but you have to also base your reality on the ultimate reality that we're souls. You can't base your life. Doesn't mean you don't take care of your needs and fulfill your desires, but you can't base your life that this is your eternal reality. And that's why sometimes in the Shastra, you know, there's the heavy preaching about family life. Because people in those days actually had successful ones that made you attached. You know, so... And you see it when you actually see the you know, families that are, you know, together, extended, and, you know, all those other elements. So, we always often discuss that sometimes. So when you get that kind of preaching and you're in that kind of circumstance, you just go, yeah. When you get that type of preaching, right, and you haven't had an experience that satisfies your desires, you become a little bit like Musk. What's going on? Why is it so heavy? But, anyway, I should stop now because then I can leave some time for questions because I got to go to the city. Anybody like to say Hare Krishna or ask a question? I'm leaving some time for that.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Gail here.
Gail, Rangi.
I wanted to get a little clearer about why we are Rupanugas instead of like Sanatanugas, because you know Lord Chaitanya, okay, he spent a long time instructing him also. Is it because of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and the dramas, or
it's because
what's the evidence?
First of all, the evidence is that it's mentioned by acharyas according to Prabhupada and previous acharyas known as Rupanugas. But when we say Rupanugas, what we mean is that the goal of our movement is Raga Nuga Bhakti, to have a spontaneous relationship with Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how to do that? Well, first you have to understand the goal and the sentiments, and then you have to understand the process, how to achieve it. Even the practice of Raganuga Bhakti, it's based on Rupa Goswami's verses in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And he had, and the whole Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is about that, about the rasa and relationship with Krishna, etc. So that's why we're called Rupanugas, because that understanding is specifically coming through him. Different of the six Goswamis were empowered in different ways, no doubt. You know, Sanatan Goswami was asked to establish Vaishnava etiquette and, you know, different philosophy, etc. But in that sense of really, what did Chaitanya Mahaprabhu come to give? He came to give Rakanuga Bhakti, right? So who did he empower to give that? He empowered Rupa Goswami. And that's the whole, so you'll see, you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's the one who understood what Lord Chaitanya's mind was and was the one that it could express it and also outline the basic practices on how to do it. So entering into that line, we're following Rupa Goswami.
Okay.
And therefore, the term Rupanuga is only in reference to him. And it means in the line of Ragmarg, it's coming from him. Okay?
You say, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Arindasa Guru Maharaj is Govind Bhakta Das.
I will. Over on. Thank you. Still remembering that wonderful program at your house. Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj. And I just know, Gorangi asked another good question. But it was also Rupa Goswami who wrote that verse, Anarpita Charim Charat, Korunaya Bataru, Kolo.
Anarpita Charim Charat, Korunaya, Anarpita. Never before given. Never before given. Anarpita. I remember there's one sadhu. He started speaking on that verse. Anarpita.
Yeah.
Never before given. And he went on and on and on. Why? What was it about Lord Chaitanya that was never before given? I didn't hear the class, but he was telling me his realizations once. I wish I would. You know, mantras chanting publicly, and you know, so many things. Raga Ruga Bhakti. So many things. Anarpita, Charim Charat, for a very long time. Anarpita, Charim Charat. Never before given. Samarpitam, Unato Jvala, Rishwam, Bhakti. Never before given.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bom.
Hare Bom.
Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Carl
hey.
Stella.
Oh, great. Wonderful. It's great to have you as our audience. I know, Carl, this must be particularly an attractive part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita for you.
Yeah, beautiful.
Thank you. Good.
Thank you, Maharaj. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Bol, Maharaj.
Chaitanya Priya, nice to hear from you.
Nice
Good.
To hear from you, too.
Thank you.
Thank
Anybody
you.
Else?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Henry, wow. Great to hear from you again. And I'll call you soon to see if I can coordinate even stopping there. Maybe if I go to Nanda Dulal's on the way, I can stop. We'll talk about that. Okay, Hare Krishna.
Oh,
anybody else like to say hello? Okay. There are some that say hello. There are some that don't say hello. And there are some that don't come on and listen. Okay. Hare Krishna. Don't you cope with you, yourself, with you, with you, with you.